listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
I've talked to many doctors who tell me that my vitamins are a waste of my money because I get enough of them through my diet, that they just pass through my body and that the body can't use them sometimes because of the form that they're in, and so forth. But frankly, I don't know how I would have maintained my health all of these years without vitamins and supplements, which, after all, were much less expensive than doctor visits, medicines, and illnesses. And for the 20 years I was a single parent of my two birth children, vitamins and supplements were what I used to keep us healthy and prevent illnesses like colds and flus. What about you? In 2006, 50% of the U.S. populace over the age of 18 consumed dietary supplements. During the 50 years I've used vitamins and supplements, there have been many attempts to regulate, restrict, and codify such vitamins and supplements, and now there's a new attempt, which we'll be talking about today. Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host, and we invite you to interact with us on our chat as you listen to the show, both on the Emotional Pro site and blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. My guest today is Scott Tipps, who's president of the National Health Federation. He came to California from Texas at age 21, earned his bachelor's degree magna cum laude from the University of California in Los Angeles, while working three jobs to put himself through school. And then he lived and studied French and history at the Sorbonne in Paris, France. After one school year there, he came back to the U.S., spent the summer building houses to earn money for law school. He then went to the University of California, Berkeley School of Law, that's called Bolt Hall. He was accepted into the California Law Review and was its managing editor and eventually earned his Juris Doctorate degree. When he passed the California bar exam, he specialized in food and drug law and trademark law, and he also engages in business litigation, general business law, and nonprofit organizations with an international clientele. Since 1989, Scott's been the general counsel for the National Health Federation, which is the world's oldest health freedom organization for consumers, and he's also editor-in-chief of its magazine, Health Freedom News. In 2007, he became the National Health Federation president, and he's been a frequent speaker for the organization and for health freedom on several continents. Scott Tipps, you've been a busy person. Welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. And yes, I have been busy, and I rather suspect you've been very busy yourself.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah.
We don't have time.
I know. It would fill volumes, I'm sure.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. I know you've been jetting
Thank
all
you.
Over the world. Let's talk first about attempts to limit individual freedom of choice in health matters. I think that most people aren't aware that their people or groups or governments attempting to limit what they can do regarding their own health. And so my first question is, why do people want to restrict individual freedom of choice in health matters? What's the basic motivation?
Well, I think there are a whole array of different motivations, ranging from those people who are do-gooders and think that people are wasting their money on supplements and these natural health things, and that the really only solution are drugs and more drugs, surgery perhaps in certain cases, and just a standard American diet, and that will suffice, and that everything else is nonsense. So there are those types, the well-meaning types, but clearly misguided. And that ranges all the way down to the malevolent, those people who really know that these approaches that you and I and hopefully most of your listeners, if not all of your listeners, take That is a healthy diet coupled with supplements and good exercise and the like, that they know this is good for them, but they just don't want us to have it because it will cut into either their sales of drugs and disease care, or it will impact them in some other way. Perhaps they have an agenda for the especially malevolent types, the evil types, an agenda to actually get rid of a good number of us, or at least to reduce the population growth by stunting fertility. Because in all the things that I've been looking at, whether it's food contamination, whether it's reducing the potency of supplements, Obamacare, and so on, it all seems to have a single common denominator, and that's reducing the fertility rate of people, the fertility of men and women. So it just seems to keep adding up to that in all the things I've been seeing across the board, whether it's Codex Alimentarius, whether it's domestic legislation, you name it, it all seems to point to that.
Now, that's one I didn't run across when I was researching. So are you saying essentially that a large part of the effort to regulate our individual health choices is population control?
It's funny, Eileen. I never used to think that. And, I perhaps gave them more credibility or credence, let me say, than I should have. But when I look at what's going on at Codex level, when I look at the legislation to take away our supplements, when I look at all the food additives that go in to our foods, whether it's melamine, whether it's ractopamine in pork and bacon, whether it's GMO foods, whether it's the electromagnetic fields, you name it, it all has the little, they all are circles, and the intersecting part of all those circles is fertility. It's not killing us off more quickly. That does happen in some cases. It's not dumbing us down. That happens in other cases. But if you take each of those and you look at the common denominator, it really seems to tally up to being fertility, reducing fertility. So if someone has a plan, and I've found no smoking gun yet that says they do, but if someone does, then it clearly points to reducing the fertility rate. And they're probably doing a pretty darn good job of it, too. Now, that's not what got me into health freedom. It wasn't that. It's just sort of adding up two and two and hopefully getting four. And that's what it seems to be pointing at. And I see this at the Codex Alimentarius meetings where people with perfectly good intentions are acting as either the unwitting tools of those who have a, let's say, more sinister agenda, or they just are perhaps actively involved in implementing these plans. But it is rather sad to say, because most people will just, laugh at what I have to say here, thinking, oh, who could want to do that? But yet, if you just look at the evidence around you, you will see this common factor. And call it what you will, it's still there. So even if someone's not intending to do it, the net effect is going to be the same. It is, in fact, reducing fertility rates.
Well, now you're the president of the National Health Federation, and that was created in 1954, I think. That was before... 55. That was before Earl Butz was appointed to the Secretary of Agriculture, which was 71. And he encouraged an uptick in soybean and corn production so that we could produce long-lasting foods and ship them around the world. And so because those things didn't coincide, I'm curious, what was it that stimulated people in 1955 to feel that we needed something like the National Health Federation?
Well, Eileen, you have this incredible knack of asking all the tough questions that kind of get to the heart of matters. So it was admittedly a bit before my time. I mean, I was alive then, but I wasn't a member of the NHF. But I knew most of the old-timers who have since passed on. And my understanding, including from Charles Chrysalis, who was amongst the founding members, is that it was really a threat to the health food industry in particular and supplements in particular. And they decided to, and also water fluoridation of the public water supply. And the federation was exactly that. It was a federation. It was a group of arrayed consumers and doctors, alternative doctors, chiropractors and the like. Chiropractors at the time were heavily persecuted by the AMA, and they just all banded together into this federation, and we were the only health freedom group actually in the world. We were the first one, and that persisted, that lasted like that for many decades, and probably nearly 3.5 decades it lasted, where it was the only game in town was the NHF, and we were quite active on all fronts. Now, we're still active on all fronts, but now there are all sorts of splinter groups out there, and you name it, they're out there from A to Z. But at the time, it was really that. It was really about protecting us from the clutches of the FDA, especially the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, because the Food and Drug Administration has always had this anti-supplement mentality, perhaps even an agenda at that time, to restrict our access to supplements. And, in fact, it was the NHF that actually saved supplements multiple times, but one time in particular was when Maureen Solomon was trying to talk to Claude Pepper, who had a bill before Congress, and this was in the 80s. And he was the representative, the Democratic representative from Florida, and he was particularly anti-supplement. And he was going to pass a bill that would forbid the post office from sending supplements through the mail.
Yeah.
Now we have Federal Express, but at that time you didn't really have Federal Express or DHL or Airborne or any of those outfits. And so his bill in a heavily democratically controlled House and Senate was very likely to pass. He had a very good success rate at getting bills passed. So Maureen flew out there. She was president of the NHF, flew out there, tried to get an audience with His Honor, really not His Honor, but he thought so, and never could. He wouldn't see her. Well, she finagled the secretary into finding out when he was going to fly back home for the break.
Uh-oh.
The House, you know, had a like spring break or something to go home to his district, and she booked a flight, and on the same flight, and flew from Washington to Florida with him and actually finagled a seat right next to him and talked his ear off the whole flight. Well, by the time they landed, she had convinced him to withdraw his bill, and that happened. So there's one example of what NHF did back in the 80s that a lot of people don't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that supplements were saved that way. And it was one of those things where it was important, and, you know, it wasn't the only way to get supplements, but it was certainly a major way for people, certainly in rural areas, to get supplements when they didn't have access to health food stores. So it was a major victory.
That was great. Yeah, my grandmother lived in South Georgia on a rural route, and I know she ordered many things that came through the mail. Well, in the U.S., Scott, a big concern of yours right now, I know part of, or at least my understanding is that part of your motivation in coming on to a radio show like this is to get some dialogue going and some awareness going. And I know that right now there's H.R. 3380, which is a as I could find it, it's a very short bill that's put up by former Republican representative from Indiana's 5th District, a man named Dan Burton, co-sponsored by two other Republican representatives, Rob Bishop and Timothy Johnson. And, you know, I'll put this all in kind of I actually have two questions, but I'm going to put them together because Eli Lilly, which is a huge pharmaceutical company and maker of Prozac, has its world headquarters in Indiana, which, you know, and Abbott Laboratories headquarters is in Illinois. And NPS Pharmaceuticals is doing well in Utah, and that's where these three people are from. So tell us about this bill and what you think motives behind it are.
The bill came about in the first place. It's called the Dietary Supplement Protection Act. I actually named it. And it came as an idea when the FDA issued one of its edicts. It's kind of a long story that I'll make short so your listeners won't get too bored. But basically, when the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act was passed in 1994, which all it did, it didn't take away the regulatory power of the FDA over supplements at all. It just basically took away the arbitrary power of the FDA to arbitrarily decide that this particular supplement combination was constituted, for example, a food additive and therefore had to undergo stringent testing and expensive testing before it could be offered to the public. So the diet, you know, the whole industry united and reared up on its hind legs and got this bill passed unanimously in Congress, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHEA as we call it now. And it was passed, but it was a compromise bill. And one of the compromise provisions was that all supplements on the market as of the date of passage, that is October 15th, 1994, were deemed grandfathered in. Anything offered on that date of passage and thereafter, meaning up to the present, right today, this day, right now, would be deemed new dietary ingredients, and there is a notification process whereby before it could be any of these new dietary ingredients or NDIs could be offered to the public, then they had to, the manufacturer, distributor, had to send a letter of notification to the FDA, wait a certain period of time before they could introduce it in the market. The burden of proof, of it being dangerous was on the shoulders of the FDA. If they saw there was a danger there, then they could go and stop it before it got on the market. Well, in July of 2011, fast forward here about 17 years, the FDA unilaterally decided to flip this burden of proof on its head and put it on the shoulders of the industry. That is, it was up to them to prove that all new dietary ingredients were safe before they came on the market. It was no longer a notification process. It was simply to be that they would have to undergo very expensive testing. So, bottom line, what this means to your listeners and you and me, is that these companies, for products that have been on the market safely for decades, would have to undergo very expensive, almost drug-like testing that would cost them hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, to do it. So things that we're used to, like coenzyme Q10, resveratrol, L-GABA, those are all NDIs. They were introduced into the market after, as of October 15th, 1994, or in fact much later. So our bill, cutting to the chase here, Eileen, our bill simply, in one fell swoop, and that's why it's such a short bill, changes the date to take away that arbitrary power from the FDA, that really senseless power, because you have to keep in mind, a lot of people might say, oh, but this, why not test them? Make it safe for everyone. You know, that's the usual hue and cry. But the fact of the matter is that these products are so incredibly safe already that you're more likely to die from a bee sting, falling from a horse, getting hit by a lightning bolt than you are from taking a supplement. That's how safe they are. You can compare supplements very favorably, their track record of safety, to drugs, to food. Even food kills 5,000 people a year. Supplements haven't killed anywhere close to 5,000 people. At most in the last 25 to 30 years, maybe they have harmed about 10 to 20 people. And those are from the Center for Disease Control's own statistics. They have an incredibly safe track record. So what these morons at the FDA are proposing is, in order to save a handful of people, and, you know, of course we'd want to save a handful of people, they're proposing to increase the price, because, of course, this testing doesn't come without a cost to the consumer. The manufacturer is going to pass it along to us. They're going to price these things out of the hands of ordinary consumers, especially poor people. So what people don't see, especially bureaucrats, is the invisible cost of this sort of legislation, or this kind of, in this case, not legislation, but regulation, and that is how many people are going to die because they didn't get the supplements that would have helped them and they turned to drugs instead. How many people will die because these products have become so costly for them they can no longer afford them? So on one hand, you have 5 people or 10 people or a dozen people's lives at stake, perhaps, and I'm not even willing to concede that. On the other hand, you have hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, because we aren't just talking about people who die. We're talking about people who get sick, lose time at work, maybe get made more feeble because of the illness, and their quality of life suffers. So which would you do? You know, people have a tendency to think these days that regulations are without a cost, that, well, just heap them on and let's make everything safe. But the truth is that all regulations have a cost. So what our bill does is it just changes the date. It takes that October 15th, 1994 date, and it says everywhere that it says October 15th, 1994 is the dividing line between grandfathered in and the new dietary ingredients. Let's just fast forward that to January 1, 2007, and we'll encompass within it. It's a quick fix, admittedly, but it's an easy one, and it's a politically expedient one, and it's one that should go over. The problem is that because the industry, the health food industry, isn't unified anymore, we didn't get much support behind that bill. And the other thing, it was a year for a presidential election. We introduced that bill in the fall of 2011, and we had some momentum behind it, but the fact of the matter is that the industry didn't jump on it. They were too busy arguing amongst themselves because, well, you know, it didn't allow for car washes, or it didn't do, you know, deal with probiotics, as one guy told me, who was in the industry. And so they didn't get behind it. The industry's no longer united like as it used to be. Many of the industry leaders have been bought out by pharmaceutical companies, and some of the people who have bought them out who aren't with the pharmaceutical industry, you know, they're not in it because they're interested in health. They're in it because they can make money. They'd be selling, you know, shopping carts if they could make more money at that. So there's not the heart and soul isn't in it as it once was. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a lot of trouble getting support for it. So that's one reason I appreciate your bringing up the topic and talking about this. Now, before we get too far into H.R. 3380, let me tell you, it is unfortunately, because it was overshadowed greatly by the fiscal, so-called fiscal cliff, well, actual fiscal cliff, and the presidential election, it didn't get passed. It died. We are reviving it this month, actually.
Okay, let me stop you right here because we've come up
sure.
to our break. And when we come back, I want you to finish this because it's very interesting. All right.
Okay.
My guest today is Attorney Scott Dipps, who's president of the National Health Federation. And you can find it online at thenhf.com. We're talking about proposed federal regulation that may affect your ability to get reasonably priced and readily available vitamins and supplements for your personal use. We'll have more on this topic when we return here on Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Remember that upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on emotionalpro.com. And next week, I'll talk to you about next week's show because I put that material is too far away for me to reach right now. But be sure to listen next week because every show that we have on Full Power Living is interesting. And if you can't listen to our live broadcast on Blog Talk Radio or EmotionalPro.com, subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. We do thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. I'm talking today with the president of the National Health Federation, attorney, author, and speaker Scott Dipps. Now, Scott, you were talking about how you are in the process of reintroducing this H.R. 3380 because due to the presidential election and our concern with the fiscal cliff, it sort of lost momentum when you introduced it before. Will you go on with that story, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Eileen. Basically, what happened is the clock ran out and the bill was left hanging in committee, but we have not given up on it. And our lobbyist, Lee Bechtel, who's there in Washington, D.C., has found another sponsor, and we are going to reintroduce it perhaps even this month, if not this month, which is nearly up, then in April 2013. And so you will see a new bill number. It will have the same name, the Dietary Supplement Protection Act, and we will go forward. I think with the light not shining so predominantly on the spotlight on the presidential election and the fiscal cliff problem, the representatives will have more time and energy and to be able to focus on this as well as other situations. So we have a lot more hope for it, but really it all depends upon people like your listeners to write their congressmen, their congresswomen, and ask them to sponsor this bill. And they should do that. They can go to our site, and we will have information there for them. It's not up yet because we don't have the new bill number, but as soon as we get the new bill number, we will have it there. with sample letter and list of their representatives. They don't have to guess who their representative might be, and to contact them. And we need this kind of support. It's absolutely vital, because without it, it's not going to pass. We need this kind of support. You know, when Deshaies was passed in 1994, Congress received more letters from constituents and the general public than on any other issue that they ever had received since the Vietnam War. And so that was in the space of about 20 years. So the most in 20 years. It was an incredible, you know, outcry to pass Deshaies. And we need the same sort of thing as well. And we need pressure brought on the industry as well to support the bill. So it will go forward. We are not letting it lie down, and we are going to push it through to completion.
All right. Thank you. I hear your determination. Well, I know, too, that you just returned from, you had mentioned this before, the International Codex Alimentarius Commission Conference held in Beijing in 2013 in March. And I looked them up, and there were like 24 different meetings. They covered different geographical areas, fisheries, pesticides and contaminants in foods, food additives, fruits and vegetables. And personally, I never knew there was such a commission. I suspect a lot of people don't know about the commission. So can you tell us a little bit about it and what it does, and what new things are percolating on the international level right now?
Absolutely, Eileen, and I can tell you do your homework, so you're going to be a tough cookie to fool. this is not that I would try. I would fail utterly, but the Codex Alimentarius Commission is currently celebrating its 50th anniversary. It's been around 50 years, not quite as long as the National Health Federation, but, you know, it's still getting up there. And, in fact, before I go too far, believe it or not, NHF has been asked to give a speech on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of Codex on behalf of all consumers throughout the world. There's someone who's to speak out for the industry, someone for the member countries, and so on. But anyway, it's quite a turnabout for NHF, because we've been such the gadfly at these meetings. But in a nutshell, Codex Alimentarius is all about food, international food trade. And the commission itself gave birth to various committees, some of which you named, like the Committee on Contaminants in Food, the Committee on Food Additives. And the meeting that I went to in Beijing was hosted, it was one of the committee meetings, actually, under the auspices of the commission, and it's hosted by the Chinese government. They pick the location every year, and they supply the chairman or chairwoman, and they deal with the issues, because the commission itself cannot deal with everything. So there's a committee for fruits and vegetables, fats and oils, natural mineral waters, food labeling, methods of analysis and sampling, general principles, food hygiene, nutrition, and foods for special dietary uses. The list goes on. There's something like depends upon how many you want to count, active and non-active, but roughly around 24 to 27 various committees. Now, NHF, back in about 11 years ago, got accredited by Codex to be an INGO, an international non-governmental organization, which means that we are the only health freedom organization that can go to these meetings, and we have a microphone. We can speak out just like the countries do. We can submit documents just like the member countries do, and we can interact in real time with the other delegates just as the member countries do. So you have the member country delegates from literally Albania to Zimbabwe, and then you have certain INGOs. Now, of all the INGOs, the non-governmental organizations, I would say 97-98% of them are trade organizations, you know, like the World Sugar Research Organization, the International Food Additives Council, the International Dairy Federation. You know, they all have a special interest. But there are only about five consumer groups who are accredited, like Consumers International, International Baby Formula Action Network, another one that's International Alliance of Consumers.
Mm-hmm. What are they actually aiming to do here, Scott? Is the whole system set up to create standards to protect people?
Yes.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the stated purpose, is twofold: protect people and to eliminate international barriers to food trade, both of which we agree with, by the way. The problem is in the implementations, and they are creating, as you said, standards and guidelines. Standards set the actual hard numbers for things, such as the maximum upper permitted levels for vitamins and minerals, and the guidelines state general principles, usually, by which the standards are adopted. So we've been in there dealing with these issues very aggressively, and we did that at this meeting in Beijing because we were trying to eliminate aluminum-containing food additives,
mm-hmm.
highly toxic, and the only delegations arguing against it were NHF, the European Union, Norway, and let's see, whom else? There was also Brazil argued against it as well. But still, you had countries like all the Anglo-Saxon countries, especially Australia, was hugely in favor of continuing the aluminum food additives, as were the industry, you know, the International Food Additives Council, the International Council of Grocery Manufacturers Associations, ICGMA. And so I found myself, I spoke out about 24 separate times on this issue, arguing with these guys. In fact, so hard that the chairman told me I was arguing too strongly, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I don't tend to be as sugar-tongued a diplomat on certain issues as some of the others.
You and, hail from Texas, for sure.
That's right. And
so do I,
so
by the way.
Oh, good. Well, when the industry started claiming that they couldn't do without aluminum food additives because some of their equipment would clog up and overheat and catch fire, well, I simply suggested that this was not an insurmountable problem. We shouldn't be harming people's health just because they were too lazy to change their equipment. You know, I come from a family of engineers, and I know it doesn't take long for a good set of engineers to come up with a solution to that kind of a problem,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that could be done. So rather than continuing to harm the health of individuals, why not just change the equipment? And that's what I argued there. Well, the chairman of that particular session thought I was accusing them of lying and or fabricating an issue, and so he had to talk down to me about that. But, you know, I'm so used to it. It's like water off the back of a duck. It doesn't
really
matter.
But it brings up a really interesting question here, Scott. I'm preparing for another show where the argument is that greed actually has a lot to do with the amount, with the number and intensity of conflicts that our government gets into. So it brings up that issue of greed. It sounds like people really are, and that just brought up a memory. When my son was in a school, he was in second grade. They had a unit on health, and my son turned out to have the most knowledge about healthy eating of anybody in the second grade. Shortly afterwards, the school administrators decided that they were going to teach the eighth graders how to run a business, and so they started offering ice cream at every lunchtime. Now, my son had a food allergy, an allergy to grains. He wasn't supposed to be eating any milk products, any wheat, And I didn't give him money, but his friends bought him ice cream. And I went to the administration of the school and said, you know, please don't keep doing this every time. This is really terrible for my son. And they said, well, teach your son something about nutrition. And I said, he knows about nutrition, but he's only 7 years old. And their ultimate decision was to continue the sales of these ice cream products for the remainder of the school year because they said I was the only parent who protested. And I'm kind of wondering if it doesn't operate like that in a bigger scope, like you're talking about. You know, if people aren't protesting, if people aren't informed, you know, will we put our other motives, like not burning up our machines or teaching somebody something, we'll put those ahead of people's health?
Yes. Well, it is funny that you put it that way, because it is true. What I've noticed is that the countries that don't speak out at the meeting, at the meetings, might as well almost not be there. But what I have found out is, even when we've been on the lonely side of an issue, so to speak, where we've been the only one speaking out about it, such as melamine in infant baby formulas, you know, melamine's that product, that artificial product, that man-made product that it killed hundreds of thousands of cats and dogs in North America when Chinese manufacturers put it in the formula, because it would trick the protein counting equipment. You know, when the purchasers would test for protein content, well, melamine has a high nitrogen content just like protein. So since the equipment was only testing for nitrogen content, the melamine would trick them into thinking, hey, there's a lot of protein here, so it meets the requirements, let's sell it. And really, the Chinese manufacturers who had introduced it were just doing it because, I mean, the melamine was dirt cheap, protein was expensive. Hey, let's make more money, let's be greedy, and let's put that in instead. And so it killed a lot of people. Well, fast forward to now, and you find out that it actually has acceptable intake levels in foods. But for infant baby formula, anything that migrated from packaging, there was sky the limit exemption. And in 2009, NHF was the only one to argue out against that in the committee meeting on contaminants in food. 2010, same thing. Although we started to have a coalescence of support around the Central American countries like Panama, and South American as well, Colombia, Peru, Bolivia. And I guess these women got together and coffee-clatched in Spanish on it and then began backing us. In 2012, we lost, and the standard went up to the commission. You know, it's supposed to go up to the parent body for approval. But we fought it at the commission level at the last minute, the 11th hour, and we got it kicked back down because we picked up so much support. So much support that when it went back to the committee for reconsideration, even the sponsor, Australia for some reason always seems to be on the wrong side of the issue. When it comes to health, if it's going to promote ill health, Australia's there pushing it 100%. Let's have more ill health. I don't know why. What's wrong? Is there something in their drinking water? I don't know. Have they been bought off? I don't know, but anyway. But even the Australian delegate withdrew this. So NHF had a huge victory from going in 2009 to being the only one opposed to the sky the limits loophole to having unanimous support in 2012. And we won. So this can be done, and it's all because we spoke out, and even against seemingly hopeless odds. So, you know, people will depict Codex as being evil, but, you know, it's just a tool, and it's a tool usually in the wrong hands. But there are a lot of well-meaning people there. We've had support from, you know, people on the staff, from other countries and delegations on various issues, and there are some actually well-meaning people there. There are also some unwitting puppets and tools of perhaps more malevolent interests. But the sad thing is, it's a very sad thing when we find ourselves arguing against the United States government position 95% of the time because they are out there promoting a greedy anti-health issue or standard. And it's funny to be find ourselves lined up with China or Russia or the European Union instead. It's really sick because, and I say this many a time, I've said it to the EU representative and out loud to the committees, it's a sad day when the EU representative speaks more on behalf of the American consumer than the U.S. government delegate does. And that has happened time after time after time.
Okay, so let me inquire about that a little bit. I happen to be married to a medical doctor at this point, and I've been an alternative medicine person all my life. Scott, you'll appreciate that at one time when I first met my husband, I told him I've been spending most of my adult life trying to stay away from people like you. So I'm aware that there are very different ways that people look at maintaining health. And one of the ways is you've got symptoms. We can relieve the symptoms with this medication. This will allow your body then to improve itself. Another way is we are going to prevent illness. Another way is we can rebalance the body by putting in vitamins and supplements and that sort of thing. So we have different ways of looking at things, medically speaking. We also, however, have a big influx of our businesses are global now, and it strikes me that this could be extremely complicating. You have people, say, in the government who are saying, oh, yes, this can be done and is easy and is good for people, and other people going, oh, my God, that's the worst thing that could ever happen. It'll end up killing people. And we mix that up then with international business and how much support of our American businesses, say, that we give through our government. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. You go back to basic fundamental principles in order to answer something like that. I mean, what is right and what is wrong? Well, I personally believe in freedom. Well, the flip side of freedom is personal responsibility, and that's why so many people dread freedom, is because it means they'll have to take responsibility for their own lives. So they run from freedom and into the clutches of the government that will take care of them. But the problem with that is there's a false security to that. It's no security. And in fact, you'll have more ill health. And we could spend an entire session talking about talking about how, for example, the Soviet Union and its cradle-to-grave security system and medical system actually led to a declining lifespan, not a lengthening lifespan. And there are reasons for that, because government is utterly incapable of actually providing for someone's security. What it is meant to do is provide a framework in which individual effort, individual innovation, individual initiative can act to prolong our lives through people's focus on trying to do better for themselves, and yet it results in the common good. Now, some will say, oh, this is Adam Smith kind of wealth of nations nonsense, but the fact is it's been shown time and time again, and we could spend a session talking about comparing Hong Kong to Brazil, and you'd see how just simply having the three basics, respect for private property, rule of law in the courts, non-corrupt courts, and a free market system, lead to greater prosperity, more and better health than any other system on the planet. So we need to unleash that, and we will get it. We don't need to promote U.S. business interests overseas. That's not the purpose of the U.S. government. Let it do it by example. We don't need to go over and take over countries. You know, this leads to imperialistic wars and the like, and lead to a decline in American influence, not an increase in it. Mm-hmm. We just need to be more like Switzerland. I'm not talking about isolationism. I'm just talking about non-interventionism. And that applies in the economic field as well as anything else. You know, the age of mercantilism is gone, at least it should be. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, we need to relegate it to the dustbin of history, because we will have greater prosperity through just allowing individuals to operate within this framework that I mentioned. And Hong Kong was an example for many, many years until, and even actually to today. And if you look at a property, a land that had no natural resources, nothing but the sweat off the backs of its immigrants who had fled in 1949 from communist China and started over, but they had those three basics, you know, private property, respect for private property, free market, and rule of law. And they were able to, in a less than a 50-year period, have a gross domestic product of around 25,000, per capita income of around $25,500 per person. You compare that with Brazil, which had a very corrupt government, had no respect for private property, had a very corrupt sort of crony capitalistic society. Notice I distinguish that from a free market system, by the way. Crony capitalism is not free market. And in that time period, now Brazil has changed since then, but up to 1997, when you do the comparison, the per capita income there was 5,500 people. And yet, how do you explain that with Brazil, with all its natural resources, all its land, all these minerals and oil and the like, and yet it could only achieve $5,500 per person income on average, and yet with Hong Kong, no natural resources, and it did fantastically well. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the answer. The government needs to get off the backs of the people and out of their pockets, and you will see prosperity like you've never seen it before. And that is the answer.
Wow. That is a very good place to end our conversation. Sadly, we've come to the end of the hour, but yes, I mean, I just really don't know what I would have done, Scott, had I not been able to use supplements and things that were less expensive for me and my kids, and it ended up, you know, bringing us greater health. You know, I'm 70 years old now, and I'm in excellent health. And as I told you in one of our emails, I haven't had a wide-spectrum antibiotic in 35 years. And
That's amazing. That's great.
Because it's not necessary. But my focus, of course, has been on keeping, preventing myself from becoming ill. And I do that by working with both emotions and through supplementing and exercise, like you're talking about. It does strike me that our whole world is coming to a crisis, and I'm a psychotherapist. I've been a psychotherapist for 40 years, and one of the things I've observed over the years is that when an individual is about to make major change, that individual starts falling apart. All the things that they've been able to hold on to and that made sense to them, they don't work anymore, and they go through a crisis where it just seems like everything's going to hell in a handbasket. And then they have an empty spot, and then they start building something new. And it is my observation that that is also happening in the world right now. Some of these things we've been talking about today, we're pushing ourselves to literally fly apart at the seams if we keep going in the directions that we're going. And yet, ultimately, that may be what we need to do in order to change.
Yes. Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense. It's sort of, to me, it's sort of like there's a spin in one direction, but to reverse the spin, you've got to go through the null point, where the zero point, where there's no spin whatsoever. And that seems to describe what you've just been saying. And so it makes a lot of sense to me.
And, all right.
Well, I appreciate your letting me be on your program, and you obviously you must have very sophisticated listeners too to have followed you like this, because you know your stuff. And you know, the funny thing is, if I may just say, is that the maybe I should say the sad thing, not the funny thing, funny, strange, not funny, humorous, is that a lot of people get their news from the mass media, but they really are just filling their head with mostly useless information, you know, car crash on, you know, Second Street or whatever. But the reality is they need to listen to your program or programs like yours and others really be informed.
Yes, well, without people like you, we couldn't do it. But I've done this show for 9 years, and I it took me a little while to realize the way I phrased it to myself is this is God's way of keeping me alive and active and learning and sharing that learning with the world. I learn more by reading, you know, and learning what my guests are all about. So I do want to thank you for your dedication in looking after all of us through the National Health Federation, Scott. I know on your site, which is the NHF.com, you have articles, you have various things, including an article I noticed about how you don't have to go through the x-ray machine at the airport, which you certainly would know about.
Yes.
And, you've been spending years of your life looking after our individual freedoms for health, and I just really want to thank you for that, and thank you for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you, Eileen, for saying that. I very much appreciate it, because I'll tell you, I don't get appreciation from the Codex people, so when I'm arguing against them. So it's
you should be nicer.
Yeah, I'm the bad boy of Codex, basically. So
well,
that's
the way we should have titled the show, The Bad Boy of Codex. When you come back, we'll do that.
Okay. Thank you, Eileen, so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. Thank you. Mine too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Find out more about Scott Tipps and his work internationally with the Health Federation, the National Health Federation, at www.nhfnationalhealthfederation.com. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Next week, I'm talking with Hal Elrod, who has a very interesting story to tell you about the Miracle Morning. Hal actually was pronounced dead at one point and was able to come back and accomplish monumental things, which he's going to be talking to us about. He's a very interesting fellow, so please join us. And also write me, Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com. Let me know how you do like these in-depth radio programs. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you, Robin. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.